Chapter 12. The Covert. Cal approached the Temple of Edit not from the main road that led straight to the main staircase, but from the back, cutting through the jungle. The two rounded gray towers, one thin and simple, the other much larger and topped with three points that radiated outwards, were the largest structures for miles around. Once, that hadn't been the case. But years of war had left the region overgrown and mostly abandoned. The jungle surrounding it was wild and full of life. Cal could imagine himself spending weeks out there with BD-1, documenting every bug and lichen, climbing trees and scavenging for lost tech and artifacts. But he'd been sent here with a purpose, and had a feeling his visit was going to be a productive one. The back entrance to the smaller of the two towers was blocked by a number of massive boulders. Someone would have to deal with that, but not Cal. So he climbed a vine-laden tree and balanced out on a limb reaching toward the tower, then leapt through a round window. He landed neatly in a narrow passage, dark except for the pale light creeping in through the cracks in the walls. He moved silently through the temple, a phantom, using his saber to light the way ahead as he moved deeper into the structure. He passed classrooms overgrown with leafy plants and moss, and dormitories filled with capsized bunks and gutted, moldy bedding. The air smelled of moisture and greenery. Finally, he reached the huge, sunlit Grand Hall, and he remembered what Seer had once said about this temple in particular. She'd mentioned that, before the temple's occupants had been forced to abandon it, it had once been one of her favorite places to visit. It was built on the site of a nexus in the Force, and was therefore a place of great lightness, where one could be as close to the Force as any entity could be, a place of renewal and connection. Despite the crumbling walls and roots jutting through the mosaic tiled floor, Cal felt it too. It was a long time before Din saw any of the Mantis crew, after they dropped him off on Navarro. They'd wired him a good number of credits for his trouble. New Republic ones, interestingly, a rarity in the Outer Rim, and gone on their way. Din had forgotten his cape, where he'd draped it over the chair in the Mantis's galley. It was a presumptuous move on Din's part, perhaps, but there'd been something wistful in Cal's expression as he'd handed it back to him, and Din had a lot of capes. He could spare that one. As the weeks dragged on, Din found himself noticing, not for the first time, just how much time he spent alone. He'd never been lonely before. Not exactly. It wasn't like he wanted to hire a crew or spend more time at the covert or take time off from hunting to make friends. He missed Cal. If someone had told Din a year ago that Poncho would be an important enough figure in his life that he'd actually notice his absence, let alone miss him, Din would have shot them. He probably still would have. No one needed to know that much about his personal life. Din wished that he'd established some way of contacting Cal. It was against incredible odds that they'd managed to find each other so many times to begin with. And Din doubted Cal would go through the trouble of waiting for his occasional return to Navarro again. But there was nothing that could be done about it now. Din worked endlessly and relentlessly. His reputation bloomed in response, and he couldn't complain about that. Even if he knew his performance had more to do with him trying in vain to distract himself from his own thoughts, rather than any real ambition. He wasn't even sure what he wanted. He only knew that he did want something, and that was enough to throw him for a loop. Mandoada did not forge lasting connections with outsiders, apart from the induction of foundlings like himself. It wasn't a rule, it just wasn't done. An inherent consequence of living a life bound to a creed that few ever bothered to understand. But Cal had bothered. He did understand. They were similar in many ways. both outsiders, unbound to any one planet. They'd fought, grieved, lost. Din didn't need to see his scars to know that. And survived. Din knew Cal was curious about him, too, in some way. He wouldn't have made an attempt at learning Din's language if he wasn't. Though Din wasn't sure if that was a product of their friendship or Cal's insatiable curiosity about everything around him, rivaled only by that of his droid. Either way, it was nice. Din could find it in himself to admit that. And if he jumped at every random glimpse of a red-haired humanoid, well, that was his business. Time passed. Din worked. The galaxy trudged onward. And then there was the kid. New Republic intelligence has been picking up a lot of activity on old Imperial frequencies out your end. I don't want to freak you out or anything, but you should be cautious. The hologram of Master Skywalker was grainy, and the audio crackled and spluttered, threatening to cut out entirely. Grease thumped the communications console with one of his hands. Griffin, things been on the fritz lately, he said. Cal rubbed his face with his hands. He had a bad feeling about this. Nothing. But we recently intercepted a transmission, Imperial faction on, about a missing asset. Don't know enough. The Force be with you. Skywalker out. The holo vanished, and Cal let out a long breath through his nose. Behind him, Sears shifted, her stress prickling through the Force. You think one of these remnant factions are causing interference? Wouldn't be the first time they'd tried to cut the outer rim off from the core. It's hard enough to transmit out here, she speculated. I don't know, Cal replied, but I don't like it. That was the last they heard about it for a while. Cal's dreams were disturbed. Hazy impressions of blaster fire, blood, and silver gleaming in the sun, punctuated by his own nightmares of red blades and black armor. He meditated, but the Force was withholding its usual clarity. Or perhaps he was the one reluctant to open up. His thoughts were inevitably pulled back to the Mandalorian. Cal hoped he was okay. Imperial activity in the Outer Rim wasn't good for anyone. He kept the Mandalorian's cape close, rather than stowing it away, comforted by the impressions of memory that it offered. He saw a dark forge, lit by molten Beskar and sparks. He saw foundlings eating sweets. He saw a competent, honorable warrior who was perfectly capable of keeping himself safe. Unfortunately, none of this mitigated the fear Cal felt when the crew of the Mantis received intelligence that the Empire had occupied Navarro.
When the Vaird and his crew of three, plus the little green foundling, passed through the abandoned covert on their way off Navarro, the Armorer stayed behind. Though the rest of her followers were dead or gone, she still had work to do. There was Beskar Gom to be salvaged, and the dead had to be laid to rest with honor. This was the way. She worked in solitude, melting down pauldrons, helmets, and chest plates alike. The raw Beskar and its various alloys would be smuggled off-world over time, so as not to attract attention, and redistributed through the network of tribes. There was a system in place, even for such a devastating attack. Mando Atta were always prepared. This was the way. When the occasional stragglers in their ugly white plastoid shells found their way into her workshop, she killed them and burned their bodies in the furnace. This, too, was the way. As weeks passed after Gideon's assault on the planet, fewer and fewer intruders came down to the sewer. The Armorer was nearly done with her tasks. Hardly any evidence of the tribe remained. She was packing away her tools when she heard steps in the passage outside. Silently, she hefted her Beskar sledgehammer into her hands and left her workshop. It was pitch black in the sewer system. She'd removed the lanterns that had once illuminated the covert and sealed up the cracks that let in daylight.
The night vision on her helmet dyed her surroundings shades of electric green. The armorer stalked the intruder down the passage as they tiptoed around. They weren't a stormtrooper, but it hardly mattered if they were down here. They were a liability. When she was within range of the figure, she drew back her sledgehammer with both hands and swung in a wide arc towards their head. Her strike was blocked, barely, by the bright shock of a lightsaber's blade. "Jeti!" she hissed, throwing her weight forward, pushing the blade away. She swung again and again, the contact point on her hammer glowing orange with the heat of the blade. Her blows were parried neatly, but she was stronger, and the intruder knew it. "Wait! Gadetya, Pada!" The intruder yelped when her helmet made contact with his hand and the hilt of his blade, which deactivated and flew down the passage. She kicked the sorcerer hard in the sternum, and they fell back into the puddle of murky water. "I'm looking for my friend, please!" they gasped up from the ground. "Garganar Naik, Burkyasa Olar," the armorer growled. "You have no friends here." She stepped forward, hammer raised. "I do, or I did. I want to know what happened. I was worried, Kark, I guess I don't know his name. His helmet is really shiny. That's probably not helpful. The armorer hesitated, looming over the intruder. He was wearing a dark, striped poncho. Something about all this seemed familiar somehow. She remembered her Verd, standing in her workshop, feet scuffing idly at the stone floor, telling her about some man he'd met. Months later, he'd brought him up again in passing, in connection with some job. The same Verd had asked her, nonchalantly, if it was a violation of the creed for outsiders to speak Mandoa. She told him, quite honestly, that she didn't know. It wasn't an issue that came up very often. "Are you Poncho?" she asked.
"Yes."
The Jeti heaved a heavy sigh, equal parts exasperation and relief.
"I'm Poncho."
The armorer lowered her sledgehammer a little. "Come," she said, turning on her heel and striding back to her workshop. Behind her, she heard splashing that told her the sorcerer was scrambling to his feet to follow her. The forge was dimly lit, allowing her to take in the man's ginger hair and scarred features. The armorer was not used to reading faces, but he had kind, slightly haunted eyes. He seemed trustworthy, but looks were so often deceptive. "If I had known what you were, I would not have encouraged such a friendship. For his safety."
"I wouldn't hurt him," the Jedi said, defensive.
"I'm not worried about you, but the order you serve."
"They wouldn't either. The Jedi suffered at the hands of the Empire too, you know. We would be stronger together."
He paused.
"And besides, I was beginning to think he didn't know what a Jedi was."
"He didn't," the armorer confirmed, "though he does now."
The man's brow furrowed. "What happened here? Wasn't this..."
"Our home, yes. We were raided during the occupation. My Verde either moved on or were killed. Yours was not here at this time, though he has returned since then."
"Is he okay?"
The armorer considered. "He's been worse."
At the man's grimace, she continued.
"He will need help soon. It is not my place to tell his story, but I am willing to give you a way of contacting him."
"Thank you. I swear I'll only use it to help."
She shrugged a broad shoulder. "No matter. If you become a threat to the safety of my people, I will crush your skull and burn your corpse in my furnace."
"You may have to wait in line," the Jeti said with a nervous laugh.
The armorer ejected a data chip from her vambrace and handed it to him. It contained only a few lines of code and numbers. He would have to figure it out from there. "Leave now. I am busy."
He bowed and turned to leave, but stopped in the doorway for a moment.
The armorer had watched her tribe mates do the same often enough to know there was something else he wanted to say, but he was not sure how to say it.
Yes.
I'm sorry for the ones you lost.
Nu kiradik, shi tab achaj la,
the armorer replied.
They died with honor. This is the way.